Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. We invite you to join us for our entire 60-minute segment, and we hope you enjoy. So, without any further ado, I'd like to give our introduction. Lyrics like poetry have a message. And history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend like definition. News creates a chain of events that we all can understand. Now just pull back the curtain and see the real contribution, and you will find our Quest moment. Now, we invite you once again to join us this morning as you hear a different perspective of our diaspora. And like every show, we like to create waves. And that would be our Quest moment. A cornucopia of physics dictates that where there are vibrations, there must be a medium. And all vibrations possess a wave nature. You see, in our community, our art is in fact and in spirit the medium through which our waves travel. Where there is no medium, there are no vibrations. Now, let's bring in one of our, not our student host, but let's bring in I want to say elder, but I don't want you to feel too old. Mr. Harris, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
How are you?
Well, we'll find out in a minute. Okay.
That sounds good. Well, you know, I want to remind the audience that we are living in a different atmosphere. We're living in an atmosphere of a pandemic, which has caused us to all go remote and do things that we're not so used to or accustomed to. So let it rip, my brother.
Okay, today's change of events, which is an interpretation of the news as it affects the minority community from the Aloes of North. It's a report on the events in politics, education, law, business, religion, and science. Change of events reveals the interpretation of one event to another, and that the listener will know what's happening. Now, lately we've been inundated with a lot of information coming from President 45 and how he downplayed the pandemic and how he still was having people go to large gatherings and stuff strictly for his own personal gratification. And there was a sister back around over 40 years ago that wrote a poem that kind of speaks to his kind of behavior. It's called Ego Tripping by Nikki Giovanni. I was born in the Congo. I walked to the Fertile Crescent and built the Sphinx. I designed a pyramid that was so tough that a star that only glows once every 100 years falls into the center, giving divine perfect light. I am bad. I sat on the throne drinking nectar with Allah. I got hot and sent an ice age to Europe to cool my thirst. My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I'm a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burnt out the Sahara Desert. With a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes, I crossed it in 2 hours. I'm a gazelle, so swift, you can't catch me. For my birthday present when he was 3, I gave my son Hannibal an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day. My strength flows ever on. My son Noah built New Ark, proudly at the helm, as we sailed on a soft summer day. I turned myself into myself and was Jesus. Men intoned my loving name. All praises, I am the one who would save. I sold diamonds in my backyard. My bowels delivered uranium. The filings for my fingernails were semi-precious jewels. On my trip north, I caught a cold, blew my nose, giving oil to the Arab world. I'm so hip, even my errors are correct. I sailed to the west to reach east and rounded off the earth as I went. My hair thinned and gold was laid across three continents. I'm so perfect, so divine, so ethereal, so surreal, I cannot be comprehended except by my permission. I mean, I can fly like a bird in the sky. Now, that's ego tripping to me. And this is the same type of mentality that we have going on in our political realm today. And if we don't figure this out soon, it's just going to happen all over again. So please remember to vote.
Okay. Let that be our theme. And that's pretty good. Did you have time to put together a curtain? A musical artist that you might want to highlight today?
Yes, I will. I think so. And curtains are really an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtain and the stage. Many recording artists and companies have grown rich from the support of the community. But what benefits have the community gained from these artists? Today, we're going to Today our curtain is about a brother that's been around and been doing stuff for a long time. His name is Nile Rodgers. Nile Rodgers exemplifies a legacy and has a legacy of multi-Grammy winning composer, arranger, guitarist that's constantly transversing new musical terrain and successfully expanding in the boundaries of popular music. As a co-founder of Chic, he and the newly elected chairman of the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Rodgers pioneered a musical language that generated chart-topping hits like La Freak, the biggest hit single in the history of Atlantic Records, and sparked an advent of hip-hop with Good Times. His work with the Chic organization, productions for artists like David Bowie, Diana Ross, Madonna, have sold over 500 million albums and 75 million singles worldwide, while his innovative trend-setting collaborations with Daft Punk and others reflected the vanguard of contemporary music. Nile Rodgers and Chic recently released their first new album in 26 years called It's About Time. Now, Nile was born in New York City in 1952. To a mother that was only 14 at the time. He learned to play the guitar at 16, but prior to that, he played the flute and the clarinet. And as a teenager, he played guitar with African, Parisian, Latin, jazz, and boogaloo bands. He was also became a subsection leader of the Lower Manhattan branch of the New York Black Panther Party as a teenager. He met Bernard Edwards in 1970 while working on the tour for the Sesame Street stage show. They formed a band called the Big Apple Band. They played together for a few years and even got to open up for the Jackson 5 on their first tour in 1973. But there was another artist in New York called Walter Murphy who had a band called the Big Apple Band. So they forced them to change their name to Chic. The band scored numerous top 10 hits with the song La Freak, Everybody Dance, 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 My Forbidden Lover, Good Times, becoming club top R&B standards. Success of Chic's first album led Atlantic to offer Rodgers and Edwards the opportunity to produce other acts on their roster. They chose Sister Sledge, and their first album, We Are Family, peaked to number 3 and remained on the charts for 2 years. The first two singles, He's the Greatest Dancer and We Are Family, reached number 1 on the R&B charts and number 6, and number 2, respectively, on the pop charts in April 2018. We Are Family was selected to be preserved in the Library of Congress for music. In September 1990, shortly after the death of Stevie Ray Vaughan. Rodgers produced the Bonds Brothers album, Family Style, which was released. He produced projects with David Bowie, Eric Clapton, the B-52s, David Lee Ross, and the like. In the early 2000s, Rodgers worked extensively on video game soundtracks, including Rush Hour 2, Snow Dogs, Semi-Pro, featuring Will Farrell, who wrote a little song called Love Me Sexy with Rodgers. Following the September attacks on 9/11, Rodgers brought together more than 200 musicians and celebrities to record We Are Family. It was recorded in New York at Avatar Records and in Los Angeles at the Record Plant. And according to the video was directed by Spike Lee, an 80-minute documentary, The Making of the Meaning of We Are Family, directed by others. And the characters, progressives, participants with the We Are Family project in 1922, the Disney Channel had something to do with it. And he has been doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, because after 9/11, he also started We Are Family Productions, where he would go around and was helping people during the problems and stuff we were having directly after 9/11, because he grew up in that area. And there was a lot of things that he did in front of, he was mainly known for, but a lot of the stuff he did behind the scenes, he might not have been as known for, but he really touched a lot of people in a lot of different ways.
You know, that's a very – are you finished?
Yeah.
Oh, no, and my apologies. I don't want to, stamp over what you said. That is a lot of information that I did not know about Nile Rodgers. I want to thank you for enlightening me. And before we go any further, I want to sit here for a moment and talk about how when he came out with the Chic album, Good Times, and how that particular song during the beginning and infancy of hip hop and rap, as we know it today, and we see what it's grown into. What was the name of the group that actually borrowed some of the the bass line and just some of that, and that became like a legal lawsuit? Rapper's Delight, I believe. Yeah, there you
Rapper's
go.
Rapper's Delight, the hill gang, yeah.
Yeah, and it brought in a whole new genre of music just from Nile Rodgers. And I remember what they had to do. They had to pay royalties for the little bit of music that they kind of took out. And that became a template for other rappers to be able to take beats from other music, but this time I think as it evolved, they hip hop artists, rappers had to learn how to get permission from the artists to use their music, and it just made the whole process easier. You know, if I come to you and say, "Can I?" Huh?
No, go ahead. I'm agreeing with everything you're saying, because that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Nile Rodgers, you know, unknowingly, just by being himself, indirectly had a hand in the development of rap and hip-hop as we know it today, where the other rap artists were able to learn from this particular lawsuit, from this action. The We Are Family part is classic. And I guess I can just go on and on, right? But I think, you know, he exemplifies our curtain segments, you know, where it's like he is the perfect example. Because
he's like a curtain and also a chain of events. So certain things, like you said, by not even knowing what he was doing his own thing with writing Good Times. But then that parlayed into helping other people be able to make their fortune in other areas, you know. And and he was real good with letting people do that, you know. And that, like you said, and that helped a whole lot of other artists, James Brown, Funkadelics, Mandrill, everybody else who used, all these little artists were using pieces of their record. Now you got to spread the love, and you know. And Nile Rodgers was what the beginning of all of that.
Right. And boy, do we need good times in today's environment. Without any further ado, great job, Mr. Harris. And I'm sure our guests on the line might want to chime in when they get a chance to maybe comment or ask a question about Nile Rodgers and your segment. And I really felt that segment, that poem of Nikki Giovanni was definitely on point. Good morning, our student host, Walter Pierce.
Good morning, everybody. And to jump right into my segments of the day, of course, I will be starting with a diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. And see, today's diamond, the first of two diamonds, will be George Washington Carver. Now see, George Washington Carver was born around January of 1864. His birthday, exact date is still unknown, but it is thought to be around January. And he passed January 5th, 1943. He was an African-American scientist, teacher, and inventor whose work revolutionized agriculture in the southern United States. When slaveholders Moses and Susan Carver moved to the southwest Missouri, they built a small 12-by-12 cabin. Eventually, that same cabin was inhabited by an enslaved girl named Mary. She gave birth to George towards the end of the Civil War. George's exact birthday and year are unknown, but it is known that his birth was before Missouri slavery was abolished in January of 1864. As a young child, George's interest in plants was evident, earning him the nickname of Plant Doctor due to his careful tending to the secret garden of cotton depleting. Here, he experimented with different types of plants that ultimately formed a burning desire in George for a scientific education tailored to understanding and aid him in unlocking botanical secrets. In the late 18th century, the boll weevil destroyed much of the cotton crop that was not faring well in the depleted soil. His experiments and successes resulted in poor farmers planting his alternative crops, which thrived, becoming a food source, not only for their family's food, but for the area consumers. Booker T. Washington, the president of the Tuskegee Institute, invited Carver to head its agriculture department in 1896. For 47 years, Carver taught at Tuskegee, developing the department into a strong research center. Carver developed and published unique uses for his thriving crops, which improved their marketability. His most popular bulletin contained 105 existing food recipes that required the use of peanuts. He also created or disseminated over 100 peanut products that were useful for the house and family farm, including cosmetics, dyes, paints, plastic, gasoline, and nitroglycerin. He taught methods of crop rotation, perfected the selection of alternative cash crops for farmers that would improve the cotton-depleted soil. He took his classroom on the road, thanks to Morris Ketchum Jessup, who provided the funding. The Jessup wagon taught generations of Black students, as well as family farmer, agricultural techniques for self-sufficiency. In addition to his work on agricultural experimentation, his other accomplishments included improvement of racial relations, mentoring children, poetry, painting, and religion. His example of work maintaining a positive mental attitude, a thirst for good education, was infectious for all who knew him. His humility, genuine interest in others, good nature, thrift, and generosity was evident and admired widely. He, early in the civil rights movement, shattered the widespread stereotype that the Black race was intellectually inferior to the white race. In 1941, Time magazine dubbed him the Black Leonardo, a reference to the white polymath Leonardo da Vinci. To commemorate his life and inventions, George Washington Carver Recognition Day is celebrated on January 5th, the anniversary of the day Carver died. Thank you for listening. This is 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. Thank you for listening.
Okay. I'm going to bring in Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, do you have a question or a comment for Walter?
Yeah, a little of both. You know, Walter, as far as the use of the peanut that George Washington Carver had shown, that there's a lot of other things that you could do with it other than mix it with jelly and make sandwiches. You know, he also kind of pioneered the use of the soybean the same way. And I was just wondering if – do you know what he said about the use of soybeans as a edible, as an edible product, or was it just for industrialization?
Well, the soybean, you know, it ended up being really both. Like, soybeans are now for consumption, as most people know. So I'm not sure on what his initial use for it, but I know what it has turned into. Sure.
Right, yeah. You know, but one of the things he said is that the soybeans shouldn't be eaten. You know, that was one of his discoveries and stuff, that it is good for all other things, but not for food consumption for humans, for cattle and stuff like that, truly. But, yeah, George Washington Carver has been a very inspirational person that been living around. And a lot of people, when they talk about Black history and Black scientists and stuff, they really don't understand the depth of what George Washington Carver did, because even Henry Ford called George Washington Carver to help him with the mass production. That's why the factories and stuff were called the plant.
That's right.
But that's kind of a lot of stuff that we don't understand about how great this brother really was. Great choice.
Yeah. Yeah, and another example of starting someplace and ending up someplace else and just evolving into morphing into other creations. Your Nile Rodgers and the music and the birth of hip-hop and rap, and from peanuts to soybeans to Henry Ford's plant and manufacturing process, that whole piece, collaborating with George Washington Carver. Great job, Walter. What else do you have for us?
Okay, so before I get into my next segment, I would like to wish the late, great Jesse Owens a happy birthday. His birthday is actually today, September 12th. And I would want to give the people, the audience, also an African-American history fact for today. And today, Dr. Mae Jemison is launched from the Kennedy Center into history as the first African-American woman in space on this day. And, you know, shout out to Mae Jemison, of course, being the first African woman to be able to go into space. And after my next segment, I will read another one for you guys. After my next diamond, which is on Lewis Latimer. Lewis Howard Latimer was one of the first African-American inventors of repute in the United States of America. He was born on the 4th of September in 1848 to George and Rebecca Latimer, who had previously been slaves in Virginia. Although the couple managed to escape, George was later recaptured and brought into trial. In a famous case of abolition, with the help of noted abolitionists William Lloyd Garrison and Frederick Douglass, funds were raised to buy George freedom from his owner. He was then freed and decided to raise a family in Chelsea. However, in 1857, George abandoned his family and fled, probably a result of being scared for his freedom after the ruling of the Dred Scott court case that was decidedly against the black community. Latimer worked to support his family from an early age. In 1864, before he had even turned 16, he enlisted into the Navy, probably having lied about his age to gain a mission, and was honorably discharged after 2 years of service. On his return, he sought and received employment at the Crosby & Gold Patent Law Office for $3 a week. Here he learned mechanical drawing and drafting, although his official duties were not of those of an office boy. His employer soon realized his skills in drawing and drafting and promoted him to head draftsman, where he earned a much better wage. By 1872, his salary had increased to $20 per week. In 1873, he married Mary Wilson Lewis, and the couple had two daughters named Emma Jeanette and Louise Rebecca. During his employment at Crosby & Gold, Latimer worked as a draftsman for Graham Bell and helped him draw up his patent application for the telephone. Bell was able to finish his application and submit it to the patent office just a few hours before his competitors did. And this was no small part due to Latimer's efforts. In 1879, Latimer moved to Bridgeport, Connecticut with his wife Mary and brother William and his wife and his mother. The rest of his family had already lived there. He found employment with the U.S. Electric Light Company of Bridgeport, Connecticut, owned by Hiram S. Maxim, a direct competitor of Thomas Edison. Here he worked as an assistant manager and draftsman and invented a method of making improved and longer-lasting copper filaments for Maxim's electric incandescent lamps. He received a patent for it in 1881. In 1884, he was hired by the Edison Electric Light Company in New York City as an expert draftsman. In addition, he was also a key witness in patent litigation that Edison was facing. He also was the only African-American member of the 24 engineers in the engineering division of the Edison Company. In 1890, Latimer published a book entitled Indescent Electric Light, and continued to work with the company even after it became General Electric in 1892. In 1911, he began working as a patent consultant for law firms. Latimer was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame for his work on bulb filaments. He was actively involved in the Tarian Church and supported the Civil War veterans. Apart from his work, he took an active interest in music and could play the flute. He also wrote plays and poetry and worked with immigrants to teach them English and drawing. He died in 1928 in New York at the age of 80. Again, this is Walter Pierce talking to you from 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. Thanks for listening.
Okay, well, you know what the question is, Walter.
Yes. Just for our
audience, because they might not know the question, what motivated you to choose him today?
Yeah, okay. So basically the theme of today was, inventors and innovation. And Louis Latimer comes to mind because of the famous inventors that all people know of, especially Thomas Edison, the person who created the light bulb, or what people so-called believe that he was the only one who created it. But in fact, it was also Louis Latimer who created the most important filaments and pieces to the light bulb, which actually helped it work. So I wanted to really talk about him because I don't believe he really gets the credit that he deserves for the light bulb, because without the filament, the light bulb can't work. And he was able to develop that, and him being like one out of the other 25 white coworkers of his, he was able to stand out and hold his own and still make inventions that progress society. And the light bulb, of course, definitely progressed society and definitely is everywhere today. So, shout out to Louis Latimer for amazing invention. He also was a man of different talents. He did music, poetry, plays, and, he was just a well-rounded, amazing person and somebody that the people should know.
Yeah, and the music part of him and the literary aspect of him, I never knew anything about that. Mr. Harris, chime in with a question or a comment.
Yeah, well, I kind of got a comment. First, Louis Latimer, like Walter was saying, was a brilliant inventor. And I always had questions, like Walter was saying, that Thomas Edison had invented the light bulb. But like Walter was saying, without the filament, the light bulb was just like a flash bulb. It really didn't him. So did Thomas Edison really give light to the darkness in the world, or did Louis Latimer do that? And the same thing with Alexander Graham Bell. If there's an invention that you come up with in your head, how could somebody else write the draft and stuff for the patent office if it's something that you invented? So did Alexander Graham Bell really invent the telephone, or did Louis Latimer? We've fallen into a lot of the misconceptions about our contributions in the world in the last few hundred years, because they felt like we couldn't do nothing, so we didn't get any credit. A lot of the inventions and stuff that people of color have made over the years have been co-opted by others because of the patent office. We weren't able to patent our stuff. So that's really
right.
The main thing that white people really invented was the patent office.
Mm. Right. So Mr. Harris wants to dispel the illusion that our representation as a people and contribution to scientific advancements and development are essential. and we're pretty much shielded or hid away in our true talent. Now, today, in this program, have an opportunity to shine like that diamond. Walter, what else do you have for us?
Okay, so before I go into the definition, I also want to give another shout-out to another fact of today. A lot of people probably don't know of, who is Steve Bantu Biko. Dies in police custody after suffering a major head injury. Police claimed his death was the result of an extended hunger strike. And we all know the history of police and them claiming one thing that happened and it just doesn't add up. You know, he had he died from a head injury in police custody, which sounds like, oh, he had to get beaten on the head or he suffered injuries from a police officer and not from a hunger strike, which just doesn't add up with each other. So, again, rest in peace, Steve Bantu Biko.
Wait a minute before you continue on. Let me have Mr. Harris. Sounds like somebody's alarm. It's time to wake up, everybody. Right. Mr. Harris, Steve Biko. Comments? Question.
Yeah, well, he was one of the many brothers on the continent that really was trying to work for the independence and trying to decolonize, you know, the continent from years and years of being overrun by different countries. And a lot of the first brothers that stood up for that all came to the same tragic end. You know, him and Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba, all of them that stood up for independence of our people on the continent came to the same end. And it's important that we understand that these brothers are heroes because they were fighting for something that we're still fighting for today.
Right. Walter?
Yes, and for the diamond of today, today's definition is innovation. And before I read it, I'd like to read the intro for definition, which is, this segment provides the listener with words and their meaning so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whoever controls our definition controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And again, innovation, of course, is a new method, idea, product, etc. Innovation could be a change, a revolution, transformation. Those are different synonyms for innovation. Now, I'd like for everybody to know if you have anything to say about it, chime in. But before that, today's theme, of course, was on innovators, inventors. And when people have an innovating idea, it's a lot of things that have to go into it for them to have the full credit or to them to patent it to make sure that they claim that idea. Because we see in history, it's a lot of people, a lot of inventors that either created an idea, had the idea first, but either didn't have a patent or they did, but they still don't get the majority of the credit from publicity or any of that. As an example, Louis Latimer, who, created the filament for the light bulb again and also worked with Alexander Graham Bell with the telephone. The person who, I guess, was at the head of it usually will get all the credit, get most of the credit from the public eyes. But what people have to start to understand is a lot of the inventions you see right now are not just created by one person or one idea. It's created by a team. And that's the thing that gets messed up, and that's how people don't get the credit that we deserve, and that's how also a lot of African American races don't get the credit that they deserve, because of course they grew, they were in a time period where we were being oppressed publicly, and it was obviously shown with the inequality that was going on years ago, decades ago. So even though these African Americans were on the same intellectual level as their white co-workers and co-partners, working on inventions, working as a team, they wouldn't get the credit. They wouldn't be at the face of the papers or face of anything saying that, oh, they invented this. It's going to, of course, be their white counterparts that get the credit for what the African Americans also did. So it was our job to actually bring light to this and bring light to these certain people, because without that, a lot of people won't know who these people were. And, you know, if y'all want to also add anything to what I've just said, I'll like to listen to it as well. If you have any innovators you believe that, you know, don't get the credit, or just on the topic of people not getting credit for inventions or creations that they have done, because it is a lot out there.
That's a good question. Mr. Harris, I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah, and like what Walter was talking about is very important, and it even gets deeper than that, because if you understand that there are people that are like you, that look like you, that are doing positive things, it's an inspiration to the kids and the next generations coming up that there's a possibility that they could do the same things too. But if you keep hiding the fact that we've been able to do something, a lot of people don't like to be the first at doing something, but they'll follow somebody else's lead. And the fact that a lot of these people have not been spoken of and are being spoken of now is a good inspiration now that everything is STEM related in education, the science and technology. We understand that we're a major part in all of that, and we need to let the kids know that you can do it too. It's very important.
Absolutely. And when it comes down to invention, well, as the saying goes, necessity is the mother of invention. And for some reason, someone found it necessary to not create a widely known fact that contributions have been made by black people in this country different to all aspects of society and the lives that we live. We talk about soy not being good for human consumption. We talk about more advancements with a peanut. We talk about a filament. We talk about the patent agency in the office. You know, in the development of radio, there were a lot of people racing to try to innovate and discover certain aspects so that they can get a particular patent and win the credit. But a lot of times in that race, there are a lot of people who make significant contributions that are left out. And today we highlight African-American contributions in that science in today's history on our program of Quest Community Vibrations. And I'd like to mention live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. Okay, Walter, I'm going to throw it back to you.
Yes, and just this is really another just conversation I want we could have also, and that deals with COVID with sports. And, you know, it's football season come up, and this deals with the combination of college students and also the professional. What most professional teams are going to do, they're going to allow people to attend the game, but only at a certain capacity. So the Chiefs and the Texans had a game on Thursday, which only had 17,000 people, but it the arena usually fits about, or that stadium usually fits about 70,000. And with the NFL doing that, there's been also college teams and a lot of sports that have been canceled for the fall due to the virus spreading. And I just want to give people y'all opinion on it. Do y'all believe that it's still, because we've seen what the NBA was able to do with the bubble and how they were able to contain the virus and not have it spread to their place. So why couldn't these colleges and these sports have it as well, where they have a system testing these players regularly so that they can have their season? Because a lot of people, you know, either seniors, they're leaving, they're just coming in, and they're not going to be able to experience their season because of the virus. And that takes away from the exposure, either from teams or from kids. I mean, or from pro teams, college teams, high school teams. It takes away the exposure from that. So I just wanted to get y'all's take on what y'all believe. Should they keep this, or should they just let them play and figure out a system?
Thanks. Mr. Harris, I'm going to let you go first.
Personally, I think that a lot of this academics and sports is kind of overlapping. And monies and stuff that are available to colleges for athletics and stuff are a major contribution to their endowment. So they're really doing sending these kids out on a financial mission more than an athletic mission. And I think it's kind of sad because, like, even when Magic Johnson brought light to the AIDS epidemic, the NBA, a lot of people were like, I don't want to play anybody who's, like, sweating. We don't know who got this. We don't want to be around anybody who's like this, you know. And it caused a change to the point where people were like, am I going to put my finances in trouble because of somebody else's health? And a lot of colleges and stuff, they don't care about these kids on the same level as I think they should. So just like going back into the classroom, this is an economic thing. It's not educational. This is all about economics. And I think it's dangerous, personally.
Okay. My take on this is the energy and the finances that they're putting behind the whole idea of making this happen. You know, can we have sports? The answer is yes. Is it financial? The answer is yes. Can we have a plan to test the participants on the professional NFL level and on the college level? Well, can we put together tests to monitor the health of these athletes? The answer, again, well, financially, yes, we can make it happen. My question is, and Mr. Harris, you said it, where is that same energy, where is that same amount of money being placed in the whole idea of opening up our schools safely? And so I question the priorities of it all. And that's just my viewpoint and just my opinion. But you raise good questions, a good point to bring up for discussion in today's program. So without any further ado, I'd like to bring in a phone call, one of our guests that's on the line, and we've discussed a number of different things. I don't know if you were able to keep up with us and take notes, but I have caller 6139 on the line. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, everyone. That was a lot of information. My name is Tanisha Garner. Hello? Yes.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you fine. Do you have a question, comment? The floor is yours.
I guess a comment, especially it was, I guess, dynamic, especially as us, as a nation, you know, as being indigenous people, we are very, how do I say this? We are gifted with the blessings from God. So it's just like, how do we now in the society that we're living in now to be able to create, you know, the things that our ancestors have done and be able to bring out our greatness once again? Because it's a different shift now, especially dealing with this COVID. And even with the COVID, it gave us I guess it depends how you look at it. When it came with the COVID, did you take the time to take it and really realize your potential in the midst of everything that's going on? When we look at our ancestors, they were dealing with definitely a different time frame that allowed them to be creative and to be able to tap into their own essence. So I believe within this COVID is like, how did you come together as a community and start to work together? How did you start helping one another? And I think that's what it was, you know, pretty much based on. And then another part about the COVID piece, if we want to talk about Trump, they all knew about it. Because in 2019, it was called the Event 201 Pandemic Exercise. And it talked about, it was called the Event 201. It's a pandemic tabletop exercise, and it was hosted by the Johns Hopkins Center of Health and Security in partnership with the World Economic Forum and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation on October the 18th of 2019 in New York. And then it said the exercise illustrated the pandemic preparedness efforts needed to diminish the large-scale economic and social consequences of a severe severe pandemic. And within this exercise, they literally called it the coronavirus. So nothing is done by accident. So that's one thing we have to remember when we're dealing with, you know, government or any type of structure, and how does it play, you know, on the dynamics of humans, because this is like you said, a world pandemic. So how can we just blame Trump for it? Because they all was part of whatever, I guess, idea that they had or whatever they wanted to implement. Because you got to remember that, you remember when the World Trade Center fell, that brought a lot of new laws in, you know, and a lot of people forgot about that, how that changed our life, because they said they didn't know about it. So it's like, how do we really see the truth in what they're really telling us? And sometimes we have to do our own research and be prepared for whatever they think they're trying to do. And we have to be mentally, spiritually, and physically prepared to be able to go through these things, you know?
Okay. Let me interject here. What do you think about sports as it pertains to the coronavirus? Should we have sports? Should we have football? Do you think it's safe? What's your viewpoint on that?
That's the case when you go outside, when you have to go food shopping, or you have to do your necessities of your everyday life. We still take the risk to go out. We still have children that's playing in a park when it comes to soccer. So what is the difference between, I guess, you know, the NFL or the NBA playing? You know, I think it's a lot about politics. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the NBA is playing in Orlando, Florida, where all the teams are literally in a bubble. Nobody's allowed to go out and then come back in. And then, unless it's an emergency, and then if that happens, then they're tested and everything. Let me go to another question about you. What do you think about innovation and creation?
Innovation and creation is very important. If we don't have the innovation, how are we going to create? And we have to be able to, you know, expand our mind to be able to deal with the situations at this present moment. And that's what our ancestors did. At their moment, they were innovators. You know, they came up with very creative ideas and made it manifested into reality to be able to deal with the times at that times. So that's what we have to do now. We have to figure out what our generations need and then be able to innovate it. Because right now we're in technology. Right now this is technology wave. And how are they using technologies against us? So it's like, okay, if you're using it against us, how are we going to, you know, use it for the betterment of, you know, of good?
Well, I was reminded by someone historically that during a pandemic 100 years ago, what spawned was a millionaire by the name of Madam C.J. Walker. Mr. Harris, she said a lot of interesting things here, but keep it above board on the surface. What do you think about her comments? Walter.
Yes.
Yeah, what do you think about her comments, Ms. Gardner's comments?
Her comments is true. She said a lot of information of how, you know, this COVID, of course, was before a lot of people actually knew about it. It didn't come out in the public, like, until months after it was actually known about. So this could have been stopped. It could have been better managed. And also, you know, everything she's saying with the NFL, like, why everybody just can't go out and play, because she's right. We're taking the risk of already going out shopping, people playing in the parks and all that. So what's wrong with football? Like, it makes it even better because they're going to have precautions for all that, and they're going to have standards to have to make it work. So it's going to be safer than what people really do when they just take the risk of going out and playing with no test or anything. I really don't see the problem. But, you know, I just agree with I agree with some of her points going with that as well. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see if we can get Mr. Harris in here. Mr. Harris,
yes,
you're on the table.
I was very impressed by the stuff that the sister was talking about. And, you know, and she's making a lot of points that we as a community, we need to think about more often. And stop necessarily only listening to what's being told to you, and go out and look out and research for information yourself, because we've known we've been lied to from the very beginning. So why all of a sudden are we going to start listening to the type of things that they're doing? And when it came to the sports thing, you know, that's really recreational. So, you know, is that a necessity in the society to have, like, NFL and stuff like that? Not really, in my mindset, not really. You know, do kids need recreation? Yeah. But everything boils down in this country to who's making money on whatever we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who you find out who you really have to deal with. Is the people that you can't complain about, and who's making all the money. That's how this country works.
Okay. All right. I want to go to phone line 1421 and see if you're still there. 1421, good morning. Do you
good
have
morning.
Any questions?
I'm still here.
Yeah. Introduce yourself.
This is Colleen Rogers.
Do you have a question or a comment?
No, I just want to say that I have really enjoyed this morning's program. A lot of interesting and great information and comments that were made by the listeners.
Okay. Thank you very much for, you know, introducing yourself and being a part of our program. Now I'd like to say it's time for us to wrap the show. Walter, let's do a wrap. Mr. Harris, thank you very much. Mr. Gardner, thank you for calling in. And Walter, let's close out the show.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. Make sure you tune in on Wednesday for our 15-minute show or longer. And we give even more information over there as well. So make sure you tune in Wednesday. And besides that, we could leave on our – start it off with
okay.
Everybody.
Let me just add, lyrics like poetry have a message. We hope that we gave you a message today. History like a diamond shines clear to the truth. We try to reveal truth to you, right? But do your own research. Words have meanings, and you can understand definitions. And we gave you some news as it pertains to the chain of events that we all are experiencing through this pandemic. And you were able to pull back the curtain and find out the contributions of Neil Rogers musically and what he's done, what he did, as we are family. I want everybody to remember that. Well, thank you for tuning in again. This was a Quest moment, and join us every Saturday morning. And, Walter, I apologize for jumping on top of you, but Quest Youth Radio is the
best
youth radio. Thank you, everyone. And until next week, peace.